So you heard most of what I said about sniffing, right, Bert?
Yes.
Sniffing and Ionescu's play, The Bald Soprano, and the grand narrative is, what you may not have heard was that you have the grand narrative, which is visual space. So the book is going to present a grand narrative of the stages of collectivity and technological evolution, from the acoustic to the visual to the tactile, electric tactile. But the other half, she says, the operative model is the tetrad. And the tetrad is simultaneous. It's like a Chinese ideogram or haiku. It's one moment with different aspects going on. And so the ear mode sees life as simultaneous. Great respect for the ancestors. They're still alive. They're still around. Versus the linear layout of technological progress. So McLuhan juxtaposed the grand narrative, the eye, with the tetrad, the ear, from a tactile position in between them, and then saying the electric environment is tactile, an extension of tactility. So did you hear me talk about how McLuhan would have taken over the United Nations and would have dropped doing the books? Like, I laid out the different reasons McLuhan was showing his alienation from his professor role. Remember that part? He was trapped in English Lit. Remember that? In his pound to a letter to Ezra Pound. You guys didn't hear that, Bert?
No.
Uh-oh.
Is that when I started saying that he was using, what's her name, Peggy Atwood to
Margaret
further
Atwood.
His... Yeah, Margaret Atwood to further his, what is it, Finnegan's Wake investigation? Is that when you were talking about that?
No, we didn't talk about that. But he only used Margaret Atwood for the idea of going out to be alone in North America. The survival meme of Canadian literature is what she wrote about.
As a teacher, like as him starting to fall away from standard curriculum.
Yes, yes. Did you hear me talk about that?
A bit.
Yeah. So, I just to review, he had these quotes. Late 40s, early 50s, he says to Ezra Pound, maybe even 1951, that he's been trapped in English Lit for 20 years. And that's when he starts saying to another person around that time that he's going to branch out and read everything and math and anthropology, move and read, you know, not just English literature. Read other disciplines, because he knew he had to be comprehensive to handle his vision of media dynamics, a bigger picture than books. And then in the same time, he says, I'm going to ignore the literary magazines, the small magazines, the claques, he called them, which may mean cliques, C-L-A-Q-U-E-S, and I'm going to... study the scientists at MIT. That's where the action is. Those guys are dealing with the present, and he wanted to deal with the present. So that's another aspect of losing interest in literature. Now, he kept writing reviews throughout the 50s and ended in 62, and his collection of literary essays called The Interior Landscape is dated from 43 to 62, so it doesn't include the next 7 years to 69 when the book comes out, because he wasn't doing that kind of literary subculture activity. See, for him, literacy was a subculture now, a subculture. He says that. He says, we are taking Bert and Bob's people, the blacks, and we're asking to integrate them into a subculture of literacy while they're trying to make themselves relevant to the mainstream electronic culture by getting a contract at Motown Records.
Or like Pop Warner.
Who? Pop Warner?
Yeah, I just really like that guy. It reminded me of what Greg was saying about the cartoons, like always pushing the boundary of what's allowed.
Yeah, that's,
and that's
what
the goal, that's
called.
The game, that's the drive.
That's Sarah. McLuhan was trying to provide an anti-environment to those circus hucksters, he called them. I think that was the word. The cowboys have hijacked the media. He wanted to police them. And you ain't going to do that in an English classroom. You got to take over the world and then manage some computer headquarters, maybe from a spaceship, and manage whole populations around the world and their media diet. Okay? And pretty impossible task. But he saw that economics was already doing that. Central banks running the global economy and imposing rules and managing inflation and deflation. We accepted that. That violated personal freedom, income tax and that kind of stuff. So the Constitution was violated if you look into that, but those particulars, like the libertarians do. But we ignore the programming of ourselves as robots by the economists. So if we can accept that, why can't we accept the programming of ourselves by our media environments, which is a lot bigger than the economy? So why was I saying that? I don't want you to say anything for a minute.
Why don't you say something to Nick?
No, that's ridiculous. We're going to have to mute you if you keep talking. So,
okay.
What, Carol? So with this global media management agenda, by 1960, he is not that interested in book writing. Matter of fact, he's forced to write the Gutenberg Galaxy because some psychiatrist in a psychiatric journal started talking about media. What?
I'm just saying, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. That's new information. Go ahead. Sorry.
We talked about it last week. Remember, Carruthers, the psychiatrist, you asked me about it. I think it was you.
No, it was me.
The African guy talking about the way the natives reacted to movies.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, that guy wrote an article around 59 or 60, and McClune said, someone else can take over in the media analysis. I want to get back on top of it because I'm more qualified than anybody. So he quickly gathered together some books with the help of Joe Keough, his student, and quickly cobbled together the mosaic called the Gutenberg Galaxy. People who knew were around the McClune scene in the summer of 61 would see this big table with all these books on it in the St. Michael's Catholic College Library that McClune had reserved for him to organize picking quotes from everything. Which Joe Keough helped him with, and he was just putting together a smattering of quotes with his editorial line about this has a visual bias, that is acoustic bias, and we're in a tactile environment, and nothing's relevant anymore, and we need media ecology on a computerized global thermostat, he called it. So that's him in the 60s, and then the next quote, 1970, he's saying, I'm not writing books anymore. I'm getting into movies and TV. And there might have been another futile statement in there, Carol. What was another quote? Oh, yeah, he's talking about the media in the Playboy interview and in War and Peace and Global Village in 68. The media is turning into a living organism. They are organic environments coming alive. So he's dealing with something that's coming alive, whether you call it cancer or whatever. He wouldn't be, judgmental in that way. He'd look at the service and disservice, but he said he came up with a way to manage it. So all that is not covered in this book, and all that I'm just describing is the later McClune, not the literary early McClune. And so I just cited some quotes to give a hint of that direction, what I call McClune's multi-bodied quadrophenia, but I may hold back the multibodies because they didn't exist in his day, but just his quadrophenia in relation to different environments and his different positions, his hypocrite lecteur. We did that, right? The hypocrite lecteur?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, got that on tape. You heard that. Okay.
You asked Roxana to research hypocrite, the term.
Right. That's probably right about when it went off. And I was asking Carolyn to address her audience like that next time she does a video seminar. Hypocrite video-er. My sister, my sir. What?
The Hippocratic Oath.
Hippocratic Oath, Carol. That's
HIPAA.
Good. Yeah. Okay, so I was spelling out the huge level, and Carol was finding in her quotes this section called page 20 in my book, "Hey, Marsha McLuhan, what were you doing?" And
yes.
Then she says, Lamberti quotes McLuhan saying, "Inherent in the artist's creative inspiration is the process of subliminally sniffing out environmental change." End of quote. And then Lamberti says, "But the critic's and reader's task is to pore over every word, every statement, and work out its meaning. If it is true, as Ezra Pound wrote, and as McLuhan believed, quote, that literature is news that stays news, then it is vital for any critic to approach literature in a new way, as a probing instrument capable of alerting one to one's own environment. The modernist writers and poets were among the first to sniff out the ongoing change and to be alert to the risk of intellectual and cultural hypnosis. They tried to render their own time in the terms of their own time through a constant," that was a quote. Let's see, page 20. I think that's from I.H., or no, 20. I think that's from I.A. Richards. Let's check that. Pound says, artists tried to render, quote, render their own time in the terms of their own time, unquote, through a constant investigation of language, rhetoric, and artistic potentialities. So Carolyn says at this point, this is too small. McLuhan's on a broader level. She's just citing how McLuhan successfully came up with appropriate books with the perfect pitch. And I'm saying the books were his fallback position when they wouldn't let him take over the United Nations and run the global theater. So he fell back on Menippean satires. Right, Carol? Carolyn's somewhere else. But she yelled out, yes. She said, yes. So as a professor and Noah's Ark of literature, that's Elena Lamberti, she's concerned about preserving the animals of Gutenberg. And media are animals, as stated on page 190 of the last page of War and Peace in the Global Village. So that's the point, Carol. She's specializing in one animal in her Noah's Ark. So then she says, for McLuhan also to find a form mirroring his own time, like Pound said, render your own time in terms of your own time, that became the challenge for McLuhan. In turn, the mosaic became his peculiar answer to that challenge. Now, McLuhan used to say, Carolyn, that the artist to be relevant in the 20th century had to do collage. Can you put your headphones on?
I agree with that.
Okay, so McLuhan is always critiquing the Gutenberg scientists and artists with their limited view. They are being forced to be a collage because that's the mirror of the electric age, but they're not aware of the cause of their need to do that. And he's emphasizing the cause and then saying, I've learned from the modernists, and as a doctor, we must apply their message. He's saying, I'm applying Joyce. I don't need to go back and keep reading the guy and tell someone else's message. We need to implement it through media ecology and the global thermostat. That is what we were saying that wasn't recorded.
Yeah, and I like the way you expressed that. The books that Lamberti is using as her ground for her book are just his plan B.
Yes, backup.
Yeah.
Plan B, right, backup plan.
Yeah, so that's very interesting.
Well, it's very hard to get to the later McLuhan. And I'm the only one who laid it out, and nobody's responded to my stuff. But I noticed from her book and then Jessica Pressman's book that they are spelling out the reason my chart is accurate. Because you've got the Android meme replaying the modernist agenda. It is doing the tetrad management. It is doing later McLuhan and early McLuhan. It's doing it all as the quadriphenic Android meme. And then it becomes even more complicated as each body represents each modality, each previous literary Gutenberg modality. You get that, Carol? So my level is going to be able to subsume Lamberti and Pressman, because my chart is about the media environments as they shrink in the global theater, which is a constant process of information melting, consumption, and tactile interactivity with no boundaries, and you can't tell what time it is or any of the 6 degrees of separation, what, where, who, how, and when. you can't tell where you are, and that's what Fitting His Wake mirrors, because you've been superseded by the Android meme, which is going to tell you what time it is and where we are at its own speed and rate. So, so my chart is a picture of the Android meme, and it's in the afterimage phase in the 90s. But the Android meme is replaying television. And who is the most conscious of television? McLuhan. And McLuhan got to that consciousness through the five guys that Lamberti refers to, but specifically Lewis. He writes an article in December 69 for the Atlantic Monthly how McLuhan's Lewis's novels are in the style, the tactile style of television. So he's the television poet. You can say that Joyce is with his amazing Fitting His Wake is the digital poet. So McLuhan had to run several tracks. His books in the 60s had to emphasize Joyce, not Lewis. Lewis's books were not avant-garde enough to be keep up with the LSD-taking baby boomers. So Fitting His Wake then at least mapped onto the states of mind of the LSD and psychedelic taker, as Terence McKenna exploited and talked about. But at the same time, that's for the book culture, his Menippean satire. His agenda of managing the global city goes back to Wyndham Lewis's 1919 book, The Caliph's Design, Architects, Where is Your Vortex, where Lewis is criticizing the Cubists and the Fauvists and the Neo-Impressionists or Post-Impressionists with wasting their time making little framed objects in their studios when they should be designing cities. That was Lewis's agenda. Well, McLuhan is updating Lewis and designing the global city to counter the messy global village. Okay?
Well done, Bob. Well done.
I could hear you all panting as I was saying something that had never been heard by humans before.
Wow.
Yes, I could hear you sniffing. And it even shut up Sarah. She was so shocked. She had to listen.
I'm just choosing. Do I want to say, I'll take all of that you've got? Do I want to say,
we know all that funny stuff. All imitating my responses. Okay, from the gallery. But get that. So he got his books, and so we then went into. You didn't hear us talk about Northrop Frye, did you? And how he said, okay, so he's a McLuhan's competitor. He's like a literary version of archetype, and McLuhan is a multi-sensory version of archetype, or multimedia, not limited to the literary Jungian archetype that Frye is devoted to. But Frye, after McLuhan dies, Frye lives another 11 years, and at some point later, before he dies in 91 or so, he's nostalgic for McLuhan. It said somewhere in his diary, I think Bruce Powell's book on Frye and McLuhan, or Frye versus McLuhan, might cite this example, this obscure, you know, diary entry. He says, I miss Marshall because, you know, I don't have anybody equally smart as me to debate with. And these Frye is a POB. They live for debate or intellectual argument. You know what I mean? I'm not that kind of person. I can't stay stuck in the university world. I'm living on debating. anyway, we got a bigger agenda, which brings Carolyn's point that that McLuhan actually anticipates Ion, and Ion has such a huge agenda. You know, McLuhan shrinks. That's the level we're on. We're on a huge, more huge, shrunken planet, huge human being level, propped up human being, ascending by default, which is where we're at today, rather than 50 years ago, which is McLuhan and Frye's time. So Frye is saying that I miss McLuhan, and he actually wrote in the 60s both the anti-intellectuals who wanted to hear that they had only to disregard books, so they thought McLuhan was anti-book and therefore legitimizing them not reading, and they just would watch television to get with, to tune in and be up to date, and the artists, rather the activists pursuing terror for its own sake, that would be the other guys thinking McLuhan supported them. Based on Frye says, they misunderstood. They found much to misunderstand in McLuhan. So then they say, Frye says he was hysterically celebrated in the 60s and unreasonably neglected thereafter. So it is perhaps time for a sympathetic rereading and reabsorption of McLuhan's influence. McLuhan raised questions that are deeply involved in any survey of contemporary culture and in any attempt to define the boundaries of the emerging theory of society that I call criticism in its larger context. So they moved from studying books to what Barth and the post-structuralist instructors called text, Carolyn. They took the word text and expanded it to mean all media environments. So the French were developing an all-encompassing idea beyond books. At the same time, McLuhan was doing it. McLuhan called it media. They called it text. And so to challenge society's emerging theory as a result of the latest technologies is criticism in a larger context. But here's the point that I said, which you didn't hear in the recording, is that Lamberti likes Fry's quote because Fry is thinking McLuhan can be retrieved and used to help us when McLuhan had seen years before them it was Planet of the Dead and committed suicide and died and left the game, left the building. So these guys are being forced, as our time today, you hear people quote McLuhan a lot, because he was the last guy to say in English what seemed to be the dire straits that people think social media is doing to us. You know what I mean? But we're well beyond that, and McLuhan's antidotes don't work. But for you, since you're going to have a lot of time to live, to hang out, because you're on our products, you want to be able to enjoy literacy every now and then as part of your media diet. Her book tells you how to apply McLuhan to the earlier books, to the modernists, and enjoy literature in your days off or days on. It's a leisure time activity we're guiding here.
Why would I need some lady to tell me what she thinks someone else thinks you should probably do if you're going to try to read this? That doesn't make any sense to me. That seems completely confusing.
What, that I'm saying that she's right to tell you what to do?
Yeah, or that you're suggesting that it would be a healthy implementation to help digest media. I mean, I don't know, Bob.
Yeah, you don't get her point.
Are you sure?
You have to read her book. She's
okay.
Right in telling you how to read books, which you require. That's why your comments are juvenile. You don't understand what the media environment is. You haven't arrived to 1967 yet. And a good guide to that is this book for you people to understand the early McLuhan, which you're going to need to understand to perceive what Ion's doing. Right, Bert? I think Bert understands that. May not get any agreement anywhere else. Are you muted again, Bert? Let's go over. Let's see. No, you're not muted, Bert. What's wrong? Did you fall asleep? Oh, he disconnected. Maybe he is muted. He's got to come back. So, what's next? I think I finished my point, guys, that you didn't
Great.
Hear recording.
So, Nick, I got here because I used to, every night when I went to bed, pray as I was, like, trying to fall asleep. I call it praying when I talk into nothingness. And then I call it meditation if I'm listening for nothingness to answer. So I would pray specifically for an etheric surgeon to meet me at the cave. And then I would go to sleep. And I wasn't sure what I was doing, and I didn't know what etheric meant, and I didn't think much about surgery. I just thought about how bad my spine hurt, how bad my back, how like the pain of my GABA receptor specifically, and then my atlas. It was just excruciating. So I just, for years, that's all I could really think about. As one focal thought was, please, an etheric surgeon. And then I started to wonder, what does that mean? So I started looking into what that meant. And then I realized I could do more than that. I could go, if I was having a flashback, I could pray for myself in that situation. I could comfort myself in that situation. I could be that etheric surgeon. So my newfound theory is that I am here because I wanted to get here.
Wow. Well, that answers that then, eh?
Yes.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening.
Where's Bob gone?
Yeah, I got unmuted. Can you hear me? You guys hear me?
Yeah, we got you there, Bert.
Yeah, my mic's stuck, and I recalled in, but I thought Bob unmuted me. Maybe his building unmuted me.
No, Bob saw that you'd been knocked off, Bert, and I think, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Good to have you back.
What I find interesting what Bob's presenting is that you use McLuhan. I mean, I use McLuhan as like a surfboard to this perceptions, because what Bob is talking about is really a different perception that all that people who claim to be McLuhan scholars do not even comprehend. They're just repeating what he presented in the book. But what Bob just presented of the later McLuhan, no one. Not that I'm a McLuhan scholar and know anything, but just what Bob presented, I don't see that in like this Alex Kouskas group. They're just re-spitting out, you know, quotes from McLuhan books, which basically they're just like, it's like walking inside of a digital museum, where what Bob just presented of that whole books of the later McLuhan, which is actually stepping into what Ion is doing. Because, if you look at Bob's chart of the sense ratios, which I always find interesting, and I just finished Don Thiel's book, Beyond the Word. McLuhan started something of studying the sense ratios, which if you look at what Bob is talking about and Ion, we're being moved to a whole different way to perceive from what I'm gathering.
Yeah.
And you're not... You know, I mean, I'm noticing now when I read a book, it's a slow down, so you have to slow my mind down to actually perceive. But there are points to be taken from that. But when you look at this environment of what Bob, Carol, and J.W., what they're presenting, their perception is changing. Our whole ability to perceive is changing as the more that you engage this environment. So McLuhan is like a tool or a hammer or a surfboard, whatever you want to use the metaphor for, just to go beyond the normal perception.
Yeah.
But that point that Rob said earlier, later McLuhan, really big. That's really big. No one's doing that. No one brought that up.
I feel like I lumped that on Bob for me, though. That's just Bob. McLuhan just is Bob to me. So
McLuhan is Bob to you?
Bob, you put on McLuhan.
Yes.
So then there's no distinction. So I mean, I don't.
No,
I guess I'm saying
you know where it becomes distinguished if you look at the other holy offices. I'll put on LaRouche and I drop McLuhan.
That's what I'm saying. It could be a good advantage to make the distinction verbally more often.
Well, I do show up my tetrads. The photo of one of the
tetrads. For me. I call everything Bob.
Okay.
Everything came from Bob. This is Bob. I learned it from Bob. Bob said it. You know, it's just...
Oh,
yeah. Bob said Bob because he got it in McLuhan's book. Bob didn't make it up. He got it from McLuhan. Or he got it from LaRouche. It was Kroger's wife.
Oh, for everybody else. Yeah. Until I got the... they were all pointing to.
I don't really think that, though. I really just think I got this all from Bob.
I agree with you there.
And that is why.
Yes.
I'm the one who retrieved the. Just like they're trying to retrieve McLuhan, Fry, Joyce, and Pound, I'm retrieving these people that write books for my agenda, which is way beyond their books.
Yeah.
Yes.
I put on these people just to have something to, you know, a piece of meat to distract
Talk
your
about.
Mind. Yeah, it's the point. And I want you to mistake my finger for the moon. The finger, the guy doing the pointing, is way more important than the moon.
Bob, you still had me when you were having that conversation about what are you listening to? What is listening to the sounds that you're hearing? And that's one we're going to have to touch on sometime today, hopefully.
Right. Now, you're saying, you said that's what you discussed this week? What was your preamble to that?
You and I, we discussed it in the after show, and you said to me, Nick, who's listening? And I went, I am. He went, no. Who's listening? Where does the sound go in your ear?
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's another issue. So we got to move towards playing Ion, which is 2 hours. But I want to talk about this a little bit more, what you guys got out of it. Bert just did a pretty stupendous act to read beyond the words.
Fuck,
man.
Yeah.
It took him like 2 years to read
brilliant.
It, probably.
Yeah,
I don't
know
the input, too.
And I know that Bert didn't understand any of it, but he got a lot of prompts.
Yeah.
He would have to read it again someday to really get it.
He said to me, slow, slow, slow. 3 times he said to me, slow. He did good. He did awesome.
Yeah, Jessica Pressman, in her book, which follows from Lamberti's book, is all about advocating close readings. And she celebrates these obscure digital art forms. I have to look them up and see what they look like. These obscure digital literature that is designed to force you to do close, slow reading. That's what she advocates. And Finnegan's Wake is like that. McLuhan is like that. Thiel's like that. Yes, they're trying to get you to slow down and check out some stuff you're buzzing about too much to notice.
No, every 2 pages a pattern. I mean, when I started reading, like in the middle, I started noticing that, I don't know if it was the restructure, but when I started reading, it's like every 2 pages had a pattern that just had me just to reread it. So I have a lot of outlines. So you're right, Bob, to go back and reread it, it'll present something totally different.
Yeah, and you'll understand it more. Okay, so I would just say, immediate metaphor. We lived our lives, and then the satellite extended us, and we had Planet of the Dead. Now we're watching ourselves do the second reading of our lives, and that's through the Android meme. We've lived our life, and just before we died, or somehow, we showed up for the replay, and we're going to read it again, this time through the Android meme. Everybody has to do everything twice. We always have to do everything twice to really get something out of it. The first time is too new. You don't know where it's ending. Then it ends. Then you say, okay, now I know the parameters. Now let's do it again. And
I thought you had to teach it to someone else. Or is that the doing it again?
Say it again?
I thought it was, instead of doing it twice to really get it, I thought it was like you do it, and then if you can teach it to someone else or explain it to someone else, you really have
to. Well, that helps. That's part of your secondary learning. That's why McLuhan and them become expert in all the stuff they talk about in classroom. He always said he got his best insights from his students. You do need that dialogue to help you bounce off what you thought you learned from it. But it also means, after maybe you do a bit of that, you go back and read the fucking thing or experience it again. You have to do that in proper close reading so that you get all the echoes that evoke in your mind while doing it the second time. I mean, I always find that. I think I read Lamberti's book in 2012, but I don't recall reading it. I don't recall getting anything out of it. And so I think I might have just read parts of it because it wasn't as significant as I did this time. I started reading it. And I only started reading it because Bipple, or Richard Altman, or Zarvas, Altman, you know that guy, Bert. We see Zarvox Altman.
Yes.
Z-A-R-V-O-X. He posts occasionally in our worlds.
Yes.
Yeah. He said in our recording, which hasn't been released yet, our dialogue, why did women write the best books on McLuhan? So I thought about it. Yeah, good point. And then I thought, well, what about this book? So I looked at it. Because he's a woman, and I said, this is interesting. So I started reading it, and then I was impressed, like Carolyn, at how well she spells it out, the background to McLuhan. She gets it right. Bert, you were saying this meta level. Yeah, I really want people to understand that my chart is showing it, because you've got the media actors, replayed by McLuhan, who replays Lewis.
Which chart?
The tiny note chart. So you've got LaRouche's 1840 to 1900, replayed in 47 to 57. McLuhan is 1900 to 1918, replayed in 57 to 65. No, 57 to 67. William Irwin Thompson is from the developments in 1918 to 1945, replayed 1967 to 72 by Thompson and the computer environment. TV replays 1900 to 1918. Radio replays 1840 to 1900. 1945 to 1960, because Thompson is 18 to 45. 45 to 60 is the building of the Global Theater, and that's symbolized by Croker, and that is 1972 to 77, crystallized in 1980. And then Dobbs chart, Dobbs quadrant, is 77 to 90, 92. Then you have the replay of all that. So I forgot to say that Thompson was a replay of Eliot, and Croker was a replay of Yeats, and I'm a replay of Joyce. So all the modernists that Pressman and Lamberti talk about, redone in McLuhan, are redone a bit differently the way I'm doing it, but I am showing who did it and who replayed and how the Android meme is replaying the human cultural greats, and where we're at today leads to Ion, the flip point of the Android meme. Waiting for organic bodies, the spinning clothing crystals have danced the hex advertisement.
Right.
So, these books, they're saying that media, Pressman goes on about the literary modernism is a guide to the new media. That's what my chart says, that the Android meme, to get it, you have to understand McLuhan and how he was part of the Android meme. But McLuhan was a replay of Lewis, who was not part of the Android meme. Lewis was back in the analog media phase. So you see, am I enlightening you, Bert, on the chart in a way you haven't heard before? Or you've studied the chart and what I say about it? Yeah, you're getting that. You need to look at the dates and the replays going on there.
Yeah.
So
I'm looking at the chart.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm looking at your chart. The replays, it's funny because LaRouche replay, McLuhan's replay is 10 years. LaRouche is 10 years. But Thompson is 5 and Croker is 5.
No, no. Oh, yeah, 10 years that way. Now, do you understand McLuhan is replaying 1900 to 1918?
Yes.
And that's replayed in 57 to 67, but it's actually replayed by television, which is part of the Android meme in the 90s, or its after image.
But he's a global player because he breaks the third wall, and makes eye contact and does kind of like the Larry David, Woody Allen, with the camera to the audience. I don't see footage of other people doing that at that time.
Who, McLuhan?
Right.
And what did McLuhan do?
Just little things on TV, like different things I've seen. He'll look into the camera before they can go to pan to another camera, and he'll direct the unseen audience that he does not even know is there, but he knows is there. And he's so sure that they're there that it feels good to have that. When you're watching it, it's a sensation, so it's effective. So he's a major player.
Yeah, well, they're all global actors, Croker, and they're just extensions of the media actors, radio, television, computer, satellite, which all merge into the Android meme, which is the Dobbs quadrant. And I predict, with Carolyn's help, the sixth quadrant, the hexad, which is Ion. But the, they're all global actors. You know, McLuhan's good at it in a certain way. LaRouche is good at other things. Croker's good at his things. Thompson does other stuff. But they really do reflect the decades. LaRouche is more of a 50s sensibility. McLuhan's a 60s. Thompson's a 70s, the me decade. And the postmodern 80s is Croker. And then the 90s is me. In many ways, that's when the Zenocony really starts happening. I mean, in many ways, I sparked the McLuhan revival with Nelson and Dave Neufeld. We put out the albums that influenced the Mondo 2000 magazine guys, Are You Serious and Company, and then that influenced the Wired people, and then they put McLuhan on the masthead. So the station manager who fired Bob Marshall, I heard him say the other day to someone who was reporting to me, he said, and this guy now is an advisor to the Canadian Prime Minister, you know, Adam Vaughan, he says, Bob was a genius, or is a genius. Guy says, why? And he says, well, he was on the McLuhan bandwagon way before anybody else. Now, he's saying that because in the 80s, Nelson and I offered our archives to him and John Jones to do a special series. But they fired Neufeld, so we said, fuck you guys, and took the series to the University of Toronto campus. And then Adam, disappointed, he couldn't get anything going there, so he quit. And someone else took over the station. But the point is, his father was a friend of McLuhan. McLuhan would come to Adam's house at some point here and there, so he had personal experience in McLuhan, so it was important to him. But for some reason, he didn't know how important it was back then. But now, his conventional media savvy self knows how important McLuhan is, maybe even richer, deeper. And then he gives me credit for knowing 30 years before he did, even though he's younger. That's how I take his statement. But that's only one part of what I was doing. But McLuhan is the most accessible of them all, you know. You can say McLuhan's the most successful of our holy offices,